Right now, I would like to welcome Cynthia Gonzalez. She is the Executive Director of the New Mexico Suicide Intervention Project, and Deborah Luckett, who is the Training and Education Coordinator for that project. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Oh, thank you.
Good morning.
Now, this is a suicide intervention project, which exists for obvious reasons to prevent suicide in young people. How bad a problem do we have in New Mexico?
The problem is very big in New Mexico. Youth suicide is the second leading cause of death for young people in New Mexico, ages 10 through 24 years of age. And in fact,
that's huge.
It's huge. And in Santa Fe County, it's estimated that about 20% of young people in high school age young people, have attempted suicide.
And 20%.
20%. And when you think of...
One in five.
And when you think of those are the young people who've attempted, how many of those have... how many other young people have actually thought about suicide? So when you look at it in those terms, it is a tremendous problem. New Mexico as a state ranks usually in the top five states in the nation for the highest rate of youth suicide. And the New Mexico Suicide Intervention Project is here and was established in 1994 to decrease the likelihood of suicidal behaviors in young people.
And so that's the project that you do. How do you do it? How do you identify young people who are at risk of being suicidal?
There are certain risk factors that we look for in young people who we think are at higher risk. And the big problem, and one of the problems in trying to do that is trying to figure out what is regular or normal adolescent behavior, which some of these risk factors overlap, and what is really suicidal behavior.
Yeah, I mean, one of the risk factors is a recent breakup. Well, to whom has that not happened?
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we look at 3 to 5 warning signs. So when you look at the list of warning signs, it's not just one factor. It's about 3 to 5 of those in combination.
So when you have 3 to 5, then the risk goes up?
Absolutely.
So what are some of those warning factors?
Could be, of course, one high risk factor could be a prior suicide attempt that puts you at higher risk. Prolonged periods of hopelessness. Family conflict is a risk factor. And as Deb said, it's not just family conflict, but family conflict, having difficulty in school, discipline problems, peer conflicts, as well as a feeling of hopelessness or major loss in a young person's life. All those together could be one thing could tip be the breaking point.
I noticed that on your list, one of the things was people giving away their possessions.
Yes, in fact, when someone is planning on committing suicide, a lot of times they'll give away something special to a friend or family member, you know, special CDs or a piece of clothing that they'd like to give to them. So we see that sometimes.
And so that's really a warning sign for people. So how do you work with these young people? Well, first of all, how do you, because these are the warning signs, but how do you actually identify them and get them into the project?
Several ways. One of the things we're doing is teaching counselors and teachers and other people, other adults who work with young people, how to identify these warning signs. And so, so teaching them as well as students how to identify these warning signs in a friend or a peer and in themselves as well. So those are two ways. The other way is we train graduate students coming out of social work and counseling departments who are working on their graduate degree and licensure how to recognize these warning signs, how to diagnose, and how to intervene with a young person who is at high risk. So we're teaching people at all different levels, professionals all the way to the students themselves, and that's what Deb does a whole lot of, and we think is so important if students can recognize the warning signs in themselves and how to get help for themselves. That's a huge success for the project.
We're talking about the New Mexico Suicide Intervention Project. So then you've got kids who are going through it, and it's, you know, a hard time, and they are at risk for suicide. So how do you bring them into the project, and then what do you do when they're there?
Well, we train kids first to identify the warning signs in a friend or themselves. Once you observe and notice these signs, we talk about just showing a lot of concern for that person who might be struggling with these issues. And then to actually ask that tough question, to ask someone if they're suicidal. Most times people, they know they might be thinking about it, but they really fear about asking it. Well, the research shows if you ask if someone is suicidal, it provides relief. And it won't put that thought in their head, and it won't make them do it.
Yeah, people are afraid to ask because they think, oh, if I ask that question, then maybe that will plant the idea in their head. That's
absolutely
not true?
That's not true at all, and there's a lot of research supporting that. So go ahead and ask that question. If they do say yes, then we brainstorm a lot of resources in the area that could help that person identify that caring adult, whether it's a teacher, a counselor, the Sky Center, other resources for
that
person.
You didn't say parent.
Or parent, absolutely.
Because I was thinking the reason you didn't say that maybe was because people who are in that position often have so much trouble at home.
Well, in fact, we always involve the parent at some point. And they're the person who can get them that help and access to the other resources and make sure that they're safe, especially when they're suicidal, especially after school between 3 and 5. Sometimes parents work. Well, you work with the parent to find other support resources so they're not alone and they're safe. And another factor is firearms in the house, and we work with the parents to make sure that there are no firearms, accessible firearms for the individual.
So you find a kid who is suicidal and you say to the parents, you got to get all your guns out of the house.
Yes.
And do they? I mean, does that work?
Most of the time, yes, because in most cases, I would say 98% of cases, parents want to do, they don't want to lose their child. And so they are willing to do whatever to protect their child. And we just know from the history of youth suicide in the state that firearms are one of the major ways that young people do take their lives, and that's why it's so important to get rid of them. And as Deb was saying, parents are critically important to youth suicide prevention. And when a young person may be referred to us for counseling, we do have a counseling center called the Sky Counseling Center, and we offer free counseling to young people and their families. And the reason we involve the family so much is those parents and family members provide the protection that the child needs if he or she is suicidal.
So what are the sessions like? So you bring a young person in, maybe a 13-year-old boy or girl or whatever age, and then their parents, and then you sit in a room with a couch and a one-way mirror, or whatever it's called, two-way mirror, and videotapes and all this stuff. I mean, it sounds a little scary.
It sounds a little intense, doesn't it? Well, because we are a training center, we do what's called supervision of graduate students who are actually the ones who are in the counseling room with the family. And then behind a one-way mirror is a team of professionals, the student's supervisor, as well as intern students from various universities around the state. And so, so the family is in the counseling room and is being videotaped, and they're aware of all of this because the videotapes are used for training purposes. But what that graduate student is learning to do is how to work with high-risk families and young people, how to ask those difficult questions. That's one of the things. The other is then how do I give and help a young person, how do I give a young person, train a young person in the skills that will help them cope with whatever serious problem it is that they bring to the Sky Center in the counseling session. And sometimes that needs to be a whole team of professionals who can advise a family and a young person on how to cope with the problems they may have, how to manage their moods, how to make good decisions.
I would think that even before that, you would have to just let the person have some time to talk about what's wrong in the first place.
Absolutely. That being able just to listen is the first thing. And many times a young person may come in because they are having problems at school. And some of the problems they're having and the magnitude of those problems doesn't become apparent or isn't apparent to the parents until they're in the counseling session. And a lot of times that'll come out. And if there are other things bothering the young person, one of those could be, I'm thinking about hurting myself, or I'm sad all the time and I don't know what to do about it.
Are gay teenagers at higher risk than others?
Just being gay or lesbian does not put them at higher risk. However, the victimization many of these young people feel at school does. And I'll let Deb talk a little bit more about that, because she works with gay and lesbian youth in the public schools.
Well, we do a lot of work on bullying and victimization, and for those that are victimized, different strategies they can use so they're safer in school. So, and that pertains to youth that are gay and lesbian, or any youth that are victimized.
So it's really the victimization rather than anything else.
That's the key component, yes.
Very interesting. How many therapists know how to work with suicidal kids? I mean, is that part, you're a therapist, is that part of the normal training?
I was a school counselor for approximately 10 years, and we had a little bit of training on how to deal with a suicidal student, but nothing like the Sky Center provides. I would say, you know, a class session on how to do a suicide contract, you know, and it's much more intense than that. And just the collaboration with the
family.
What's
a suicide contract?
A suicide contract is when someone's actively suicidal, to provide the name of three individuals that they trust, that they can call, and then also to provide three activities they can do instead of harming themselves. So what you're doing is actually helping them brainstorm positive coping strategies.
What are some of those positive coping strategies?
I think it's different for everybody, but a lot of the things that I've seen is, you know, talk to a good friend, listen to music, exercise, those type of things.
Now, one of the things that we were talking about when the three of us had a conversation the other day was that it's not really that these young people want to die, it's just that they want to be free of their pain, and that's an important distinction to make.
Exactly. Young people who do kill themselves don't think of it as being a permanent solution. They just really want to get out of the pain that they're in, and they don't have a list of different strategies, like Deb was saying, of ways to cope with the pain, or a friend to go to, or an adult that they trust to go to. And the more we can surround young people with a positive social network, people who are watching over that child and that they feel really connected to, the more we can protect them from suicide. That's one of the big what we call protective factors, is a strong connectedness to their school and to their family and community.
Well, that it does really lead to the question of alienation. I mean, for if somebody wants to take their own life, or if somebody is in that much pain, that connectedness just isn't there. Why is there, I mean, one high school student in five making an attempt to take their own life, what does that say about our society?
Well, that we're disconnected in a lot of ways. And what we are trying to do in our training, in our family counseling, in the work that Deb does in the schools and health education classes and with her peer helping program, is try to bring back that connectedness. And that's why we'd like to get all the adults who work with young people together and trained, because the more we have people watching and being there for a young person who can talk to a young person about this serious subject, the more the young person will feel connected. And again, that's an adult who's a teacher or a parent who can talk to them about it.
We're talking about the New Mexico Suicide Intervention Project. Cynthia Gonzalez and Deborah Luckett are here with us. And it's very important, I think, to talk about this kind of thing on the radio because a lot of people may not know about the resources that you have. If for example, let's say a teacher is listening or a parent, can they just call you and have a conversation about this?
Absolutely. I'd be more than happy to talk about different types of training opportunities. However, if they have a young person or a person they know that is actively suicidal, we do have a national hotline number.
Which is 800-273-8255, ladies and gentlemen.
So we're not a crisis center.
Right.
However, we do provide lots of support and community resources as well. We can direct them to some areas for counseling.
The effects of suicide on the family and the school and the community are also huge, and I guess you also deal with that.
We do. The effects are overwhelming. There's usually a tremendous amount of guilt following a student suicide, as you and your listeners can imagine. It's pretty devastating.
If only I had done this, if only I had been there.
Right. And what we try to do, if there has been a youth suicide, we do provide what we call postvention services. That's a scientific name for going into a school community. After
it's like intervention only post.
Going into a school community after there's been a student suicide, and what we find are that the administrative staff, the teachers, and all the students are overwhelmed by the problem. So we help them work through that whole first week after a suicide. Everything from helping teachers make an announcement to their other classes. Usually there's such a feeling of course, grief and sadness that they're not able to do that. So we'll go do that for them. We'll help them figure out how to tell the other parents, and we'll gather all the parents together and talk to them about suicide warning signs and ways to help their own child cope with the days and weeks following a student suicide. After that suicide happens in a school, the whole school community is extremely vulnerable. And we do see what's called a contagion effect, where a young person who may not have known the child that died by suicide, who is having some difficulty on their own, may see suicide as an option because someone else in the school did. And so we have to really surround those young people and protect them.
Now you, Deborah, were a school counselor in Colorado.
Yes.
Around the time of Columbine.
I arrived shortly thereafter, yeah.
And what was it like for students who may not even have been directly involved, like knowing these young people, what was the ripple effect on your students?
Especially during anniversary time, we were always watching out for our students, but especially around the anniversary. We just paid special attention to the different warning signs and tried to identify any student at risk.
I mean, did they get freaked out during those anniversaries?
I think the adults probably got more freaked out than the kids did. They got back into the routine pretty well. And they kept busy with their after-school activities, and they're well-connected with school. But we were very vigilant in identifying students at our particular school who might be exhibiting any of the warning signs. And a lot of that dealt with a result of collaborating with teachers and parents. I mean, we work together. One person can't do it all.
Right.
And administration and people in the cafeteria and bus drivers. I mean, we all talk to each other and looked out for our kids.
And I think that I'd just like to add that what Deb was saying is so true. One person can't do it all. It really is a collaborative effort between the families, the school, and community folks. I mean, that soccer coach or football coach could be a very critical person in a child's life.
Now, the Sky Center has been around for what, 10 years?
Has been around for 10 years. It's located at the College of Santa Fe campus. And as I said before, I think it offers free counseling.
Yeah, which is amazing. Can you tell in the 10 years that you've been here? I mean, do you keep statistics on how how effective the work actually is? Is that possible to do?
Yeah, we do keep some statistics. We see about 200 young people and their family members each school year. And by the way, we are open during the school year. We run on an academic school year calendar. Right. So we see about 250 young people. Of those young people, 80% are Hispanic, or 75% are Hispanic. The rest are Caucasian, and I think about 2% Native American young people. Those young people who come to the Sky Center can come for a number of different reasons, from being bullied, drugs and alcohol, again, I'll say family conflict or peer conflict. Those may be the factors that drive them to, or that they're referred to the Sky Center for, as well as suicide attempt or thinking about taking their own lives. So we really have a huge spectrum of young people problems that bring them to the Sky Center. And what we see as a success is that if a young person and his or her family comes to the Sky Center, what we want them to be able to do is, again, detect for themselves when they're having problems that are overwhelming and that they need help. And so they may come back to the Sky Center again throughout the young person's high school, middle school, or high school career. But we really do see that as a success. A young person and their family are asking for, and know when to ask for help.
Have the suicide rates actually gone down?
And the suicide rates have gone down, Mary Charlotte.
That's quite something.
Yeah, that again. That's what we're trying to do. Back in the early 90s, Santa Fe County had the 10th highest suicide. Number one in suicide rates.
Santa Fe County.
Santa Fe County was number one. It is now 10. In the state. So that is a significant improvement in youth suicide rates. And I really think it is because of this, what we call sort of multifaceted approach of education, awareness, and counseling that helps.
Cynthia Gonzalez is the executive director of the New Mexico Suicide Intervention Project. Deborah Luckett is the training and education coordinator. And ladies and gentlemen, take out your pencils right now because we're going to give you all the numbers. The number at the center is 820-1066. And Deborah's number, if you would like to call her directly about training and education, is 699-0605. And if you are in crisis or you know anybody who's in crisis, there is a national crisis number, which is toll-free, 800-273-8255. And the New Mexico Suicide Intervention Project is on the web at nmsip.org. I think we got it covered there. Thank you, Cynthia and Deborah, so much for being with us on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a little break right now. Please stay tuned to KSFR. We're going to be talking about Alaska and global warming and much more in just a few minutes.